Nobody covers dog sledding like Mushing from First Paw Media. Our team of athletes, volunteers, race organizers, and mushers like Robert and Michelle Forto brings you closer to the sport. If it's happening, we are there. Live from the qualifying races in January and February, the Iditarod in March, and in the summer, Mushing takes you on the road with our team and trail tour. We connect you with a history of the sport, in-depth interviews with the top mushers, and great storytelling and breaking news all year long. Follow on Mushing.com.
Hello and welcome everybody to Mushing. This is Robert, and today I'm joined with a returning podcast guest. It's been several years since she has been on, but I'm excited to have her back. Her name is Joy Weiss. She does a whole bunch of stuff in the dog sport world. We got a chance to see each other at the World Championships in Wisconsin about a month or so ago. Joy, welcome back to the podcast.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm excited to be here.
Thank you. Can you briefly tell us who you are and what you're all about, please?
Yeah, sure. So my name is Joy Weiss, and you know, it's so funny when you ask someone like, who are you? Tell me about yourself and all of that. So often I think that we go straight to like, what do you do as a job? And I had someone tell me one time, that's not who you are at all. What you do as your career is not you. And so I try to remember that when someone asks me that question, you know, what you do for a living to make money isn't all about who you are. And so, you know, I think of myself as someone who really wants to give back to the community. I've spent most of my adult life working in the nonprofit sector in some way. And that kind of just rolls over into the other things that I like to do, whether that be, you know, coaching the athletes that we work with, starting the foundation for the rescue Northern breed dogs, or, you know, just in general. So to me, I'm like, I just want to spend my time pouring into other people because that's what brings me a lot of joy.
It does. And you are so right. So many of us say, oh, I'm Robert, I'm a dog musher, or I'm John, yes, I'm a plumber or whatever. But you're right. People never say, my name is Robert and I love to travel to Europe, do they?
No, they don't. And, you know, it hit me hard when somebody said to me, you know, tell me about Joy and who she is. And I don't want to hear about what you do to make money. And I was like, wow, okay.
There you go. So we are going to talk about all these things, including the foundation that you alluded to just a second ago. But I know you're heavily involved in dog sports, and in particular, Canicross, the monotype sports. That's where we met on the first podcast, and of course, at the championships here about a month ago. Let's start off with that. What type of events do you compete in? Then we'll talk about your dogs.
Sure. So for me, I am mainly a canicross athlete. Occasionally, I will compete in bike jor. Scooter is a no-go for me. I am just not quite coordinated enough for that, no matter how hard I try. I do love the sled. And, you know, we live in Missouri, so we don't get to do a whole lot of sledding anymore. We just don't get the snow that we used to. But generally speaking, it's canicross for me.
And you had mentioned that you have 9 dogs. Tell us a bit about those. What is the breed and why did you pick those particular dogs?
Sure. So we have a mix of Northern breeds, so Husky and Husky mixes. We have some hounds, so the Graysters. And then we also have a little pit bull mix who belonged to my husband, Nick, to his grandmother. She had to go into assisted living, so Heidi came to live with us. We started with the Northern breeds. I blame everything on our Alaskan Malamute Ruger. Okay. So it's all of the dog sport stuff is his fault. And I'm grateful to him for that. You know, we make that joke that without him, we wouldn't be where we are, but we, brought Ruger into our family shortly after we were married, started running with him, realized there has to be a better way to run with this dog than, you know, just his leash, and found canicross. After that, we adopted another Husky mix so I could have a running partner and Ruger could have a friend, bought a sled, adopted another Husky, and it has just snowballed from there.
And that's how it happens. We typically have that one dog, our dog that we named our kennel after. His name was Aneke. He was a Siberian back in the day. So yes, a lot of dog kennels go that very similar path to you. Yep. So Joy, a lot of people listen to our podcast are very familiar with dog mushing and particular distance and Iditarod and that sort of thing. So they're familiar with that side of it. But what makes a good Canicross dog? Because I can assume you can only go as fast as the human in that sport, uncompared to like in a sled where you have a team with a bunch of power and all that. Describe the differences for our listeners, if you can.
Yeah, sure. So, you know, there's a couple things that make a good Canicross dog. And I will say too that, you know, if your dog likes to run and you like to run with them, then you're already the perfect team, because that's really what the sport is about doing it with your dog and having fun together. But if you are looking for, you know, like the little things that are going to kind of give you the edge in terms of a dog, the first thing is, you know, a dog that can focus and can just go. Sometimes dogs are so smart that, for example, Oso, the husky that I used to run with, he was so smart that he was always looking more or less for a shortcut. So the course at Bristol in Canada is all of these switchbacks, and there is a straight path right through the middle of them. And he used to turn around and look at me like, "You are the dumbest human, because we could go straight through the center and be done. And you're making me do all these little switchbacks." So he was just always thinking, which is fantastic in other areas. But sometimes I just, you know, I wanted to say, "Oh, so just go, you know, stop thinking. Don't use your brain right now." And so sometimes, you know, particularly with the hounds, they can just like lock in, they focus and they go. The other thing I think that makes a great Canicross dog and a good team is finding a dog that's the right size for you. So a lot of times people look at a sport and they think like Canicross, and they think, okay, the bigger dog, the better, the faster they can pull me, the stronger they are, the better of a team we're going to be. But what happens is you get a dog that's too big, your form suffers, you spend a lot of time trying to slow the dog down, and you end up not having as good of a race time as you could. So finding a dog that's well-suited and well-matched to you in terms of size really helps as well. But, you know, you're right. The dog can only do so much. If you're like dead weight back there, you know, and you're not helping much, you're exactly right. You're only going to be able to go as fast as the human.
And we're going to talk a little bit about your coaching program here in just a second. And I know that you guys have raced literally all over the world. I think when we spoke last time, you guys were heading to Sweden or Slovakia or somewhere over there. And here we are many years later, after a big race in Wisconsin. I guess the next question is, with all this experience under your belt, where is your favorite spot to race? Is it local, like your home trails, or is it some far off land like, I don't know, Scandinavia or where?
So, you know, that's interesting, because for me, I don't know that I would tell you I have a favorite race course or a favorite place. I think there's little bits and pieces of every trail that are really special for whatever reason. The first world championship that we ever went to was in Poland. You know, and then we went back to Poland, then to Sweden, we've been, you know, to France and Germany and Spain and all of these different places. And every trail is special in its own way. There's pieces of it that, you know, are tricky and make you think. There's pieces of it that you get out there and you think, this is so beautiful, you know, and this is why this is just, it's me and my dog, and this is why we do this. You know, we have a trail here near our home that we run on and train on. Never had a race there or anything. And, you know, that trail is just as special to me as, you know, the world championship trail at Minocqua.
So before we talk about your coaching and somebody that's already in the thick of racing, if a person's thinking about this and maybe they have a golden retriever right now, or maybe they have a husky or whatever, and they've ran a 5K with them before, what does it take to be a Canicross racer? Is it a heck of a time commitment, like, you know, with a team of 30 plus sled dogs, we're always doing something. But somebody that just has one dog, it could be a little easier, or am I just totally off base?
No, I think it can be easier, you know, just in terms of logistics, right? If you've got a huge kennel and you're hooking them up to train all the time and you're doing really long runs and things, it's very time consuming. And canicross, I think the beauty of the sport and why so many people are attracted to it is because it can be done with your pet dog. You know, you have a golden retriever, you have a whatever you have, you need a harness, a line and a belt, and you can go. And sure, even if you're looking to improve your times or whatever that looks like, the time commitment is significantly less than it's going to be with a larger team. You know, sure, the dog needs their own training, the human needs their own training, and then they need to train together. But it's something that can be done almost anywhere.
Last question about the novice canicross racer. What does a race look like in terms of distance? Is it race by race, or is there a standard distance, or what?
So it is race by race. All the trails are going to be a little bit different, but generally in the U.S., you'll see trails anywhere from about a mile and a half up to maybe a 5K, so a little over 3 miles. In Europe, you'll see the trails are a little bit longer. And so, you know, that's just the difference in their racing versus how we race here and what the trails are set up like. But generally speaking, if you're racing here in the U.S., you're looking anywhere from a mile and a half to maybe a little bit over 3 miles.
So let's talk about Lucky Fox coaching. This is something that you guys have done for quite a while, and I've heard people talk about it from time to time over the years, how they've worked with you or they want to work with you or what you guys provide. So now we're talking to the folks that are going to the next level. What Sure. kind of coaching do you provide? What can people expect? How much of it is stuff other than running? Are you guys offering nutritional advice or race planning or logistics planning and, you know, all the things that go into doing this on a competitive level?
Sure. So generally speaking, we are running coaches, but we do offer a lot of other services in terms of like nutritional guidance, strength training, functional work, those types of things. And the goal is to offer a holistic approach in terms of training. So we train canicross athletes, bike tour athletes, triathletes. I have one that I'm coaching right now who just finished his first full Ironman. You know, we have ultra runners, beginning 5K runners. We have someone who just completed his first marathon. You know, we've got people who are at the world championships for canicross or scooter or bike tour or whatever. So really anything in the realm of running or, you know, with a little bit of cycling in there as well, we are like, yes, okay, this is sort of our niche. And we started coaching, it's probably been about 10 years now, and then just slowly started growing the business. You know, Nick was coaching originally a little bit and I joined him and started bringing on more athletes. He and I have different skill sets, so working as a team works very well for us. In the last year, we decided it was time to bring on a third coach. And so her name is Emily. She is here locally with us and she takes most of our beginner athletes and our local athletes. So there are a lot of people here in our area that she can coach in person, which is great. So that fills, you know, another gap that we were seeing. But in terms of coaching, you know, it is a big piece of what people are looking for is accountability and to take something off of their plate. They don't want to have to think about what to go out and do every day. If it's on the calendar, they know what to do and they can just go out and do it. And so we use an app and, you know, their watch can sync the workout right back to the app. We can see their paces. We can see what they did, if they missed it, this and that. Same thing with their strength training or functional work or bike rides or whatever it is. And so that's our way, since we're not with everybody in person all the time, of being able to kind of get a grasp on, you know, how are you performing? What's your heart rate look like? What does your sleep look like? Those types of things. So generally, we want it to be holistic in terms of trying to really create a lifestyle of health and wellness for people and get them to a place where they're like, I really love training, right? This is something that's a part of me and who I am now. And so for our Cane Across athletes, you know, we will provide some workouts they can do with their dog. Some people want to kind of keep their dogs training on their own, and that's fine. So everything is very custom to every single athlete. No one is on the same plan. Everybody's stuff is tailored to them and their goals.
I'm intrigued about the app. Is that proprietary or is that just something off the shelf?
So it's off the shelf. What we use is, it's called Training Peaks. And so it's basic, it's built for what we do. And so generally you'll find coaches for running, swimming, cycling, triathlon, that type of stuff will use Training Peaks. So what we do, we go in, we program your workout. The athlete is attached to us as a coach. So like we can, you know, that way we have access to all their data. They can log in, they can see everything that we've programmed for them. When they go out, let's say they have a 3-mile run on their calendar tomorrow, they'll go out, run, you know, log it on their watch. Their watch will sync back to Training Peaks and we can see all their information.
Wow, I like that. And that does truly allow you guys to do coaching everywhere. I'm sure there's other ways to do it, whether you're doing accountability on Zoom or any other types of things. But I really like that piece where technology is truly molding together, because everybody is tracking everything these days. Everybody has a smartwatch or something, and that's a good way to keep everybody on the right page, right?
Yeah. And it's honestly, it's the best way we've found, you know, in terms of between that and, you know, daily to, you know, communication with the athletes. It's the best way we've found for that accountability piece. You know, when you're not seeing someone in person every day, you miss things like, are they looking tired? You know, are they, do they seem like they might be getting sick? Things like that, that you could see if you were with them daily. We can use the metrics like their heart rate and whatnot to see, okay, are things looking off? They're not getting enough sleep. So we can use all that data to the best of our ability instead of, since we can't be with everyone.
I like that. So, Joy, you reached out to me a few weeks ago about a foundation that you just started, and this is truly the crux of this episode, and I'm excited to hear more about this. First, give us a little bit of a backstory, and then we'll definitely pass along how folks can get involved.
Okay. So the Friends of Oso Foundation is now almost, well, it is right at a year old now. And so, unfortunately, this foundation was started because of the passing of my Cane Across partner, Oso. It was unexpected. And one of those things that just kind of left this hole. And I'm sitting there thinking, I want to give back to dogs like Oso in some way. Oso was a rescue husky that was adopted from a rescue in Oklahoma City, Heartland Husky Rescue. And he had basically been deemed unadoptable. He was so high energy, no one wanted him. He would scream when he saw his leash, and he would just get so excited that any potential adopter was really scared away by him. And so when we went to meet him, he's screaming for his leash. He wants to go. And Nick and I were just like, this dog belongs with us. You found a home. And so we brought him into our home. He went for his first run the next day, and he immediately was a great lead dog. You know, he learned from Ruger. He listened. He picked up on things. Nick Cane Across with him for some time, and then I started Cane Crossing with him. And he was just one of those dogs that was just a true success story in terms of finding what he needed to thrive. And so when he passed, I just remember thinking, what am I going to do to honor him? Because he was such a special part of my life. And I'm driving, and all of a sudden this thought comes to me, like, you know, the best ones do in the middle of the night or when you're driving. And I thought, I want to set up a nonprofit. I want to set up a foundation that can give back to Northern breed rescues that help dogs like him. So Nick and I sat down, we talked through everything, decided that, yes, this is something that's feasible that we can do. And so we set it up with the goal of being able to provide grant funding to Northern breed rescues. So rescues specifically that help Northern breed dogs like Huskies or Malamutes or, you know, mixes, whatever. And to also be able to offer them resources. So to help with marketing materials, to help with the pitch deck for capital campaigns, to act as a resource and a connection in some way. So I remember, you know, working through the 501c3 process and all of that, and the IRS saying, hey, some of this stuff is probably going to take up to 8 months. And that was in January. And so I didn't expect to be doing anything until summer 2025. And I had everything completed back from them in 2 weeks, and we had the foundation ready to go. And so, you know, that timeline moved up a lot quicker than I was expecting. I'm very, very grateful that within our first couple months, we were able to raise over $40,000. To start the foundation, which gave us a great place to be able to start putting out some grants. So in this past spring, you know, I did our very first grant application, which was very, very special, kind of emotional, but very meaningful. And that was awarded to Texas Husky Rescue. And I had the opportunity to go and present that grant, get to meet them, meet some of the dogs. And then, you know, the end of summer, beginning of fall, we awarded our second round of grants and ended up putting out funding to four different rescues. That was Siberian Husky Rescue of New Mexico, Champ up in the Pennsylvania area, Arctic Rescue were just some of couple of the ones that have received funding from us at this point. So, you know, I'm very excited for what we have coming up for Christmas as well. We're going to do a 12 days of rescue campaign. And the goal of this is to really connect rescues and show that the more that we work together as a community, whether that be a rescue community or dog sport community or whatever that is, the more that we can do, the better that we can give back. So that's going to be a match campaign. You know, everything that we fundraise, we're going to match up to a certain amount through the foundation and then split between the participating rescues. So I'm very excited about the foundation and what it has the potential to do, but also what we've already done.
It sounds like you guys are off to the races, pun intended for sure. Really,
yes.
two questions, and it's kind of in the weeds type questions, and the second one may be influenced by the first. But you had mentioned that the money that you're raising or giving or the grants are for rescues themselves. Is there a particular thing that they're using it for? You'd mentioned marketing and that sort of thing, or is it just sort of, you know, we want to give you a grant to do XYZ.
So the funding, if a rescue applies for a grant from us, the funding is to be used for immediate needs. So such as like food, bedding, those types of things that the rescue might need. Preventative medical care is the second thing, or transport to get dogs to safety. So those are really the three things that we ask that the funding goes to. You know, and we know that rescues have a lot of different costs. Like, I mean, it's amazing how much things cost.
Right.
And so, but that's really it. Immediate needs like food, then preventative medical care and transport. So those are the three things the funding would go to. The second piece of that is being a resource for rescues. So, for example, I spoke to a rescue here in our area that was looking to start a capital campaign. And I offered to create, you know, marketing materials for them, a pitch deck, so they could show that to their donors because they didn't have someone on their staff or a volunteer that was able to do that. So that's the second piece, is sort of being able to help provide some of those resources, because we know rescues are already overwhelmed and volunteers can only do so much. So that's the second piece of that. And then the third is that we have set up an endowment fund at this point. So a portion of donations go into that fund so we can be able to continue funding grants down the road.
And that's a very key piece, at least from my knowledge, of what really makes a difference between a foundation versus just a nonprofit. Am I correct on that?
Yep. Yes.
So the next question is kind of a bigger picture question in terms of donors. And you had mentioned at the top of the episode that you've been involved with nonprofits in mm-hmm. your day job for a long time. And I guess it is, you know, we hear constantly about folks asking for money for one thing or the other. I mean, there's sure. I mean, there are foundations and nonprofits for everything, right? How is it best? This is not even necessarily about your foundation compared to mm-hmm. others, but how is it best that people can, you know, weed through the weeds, if you will, and say, yeah, I want to help this out, but I don't know the best way to give my $100, $1,000, whatever, and make sure that it's best used. You know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, I do. And that's so tricky because, like you said, there are so many organizations out there. And sometimes I think, you know, people, like, we give out of the goodness of our heart, and it's, you know, I'm giving you this money in the hopes that you do the right thing with it. But as things become more expensive and finances are a little bit tighter, you know, I know that people still want to give, but they want to make sure that they're doing it right, that it's going to a place where it's going to be used in the best way possible. And I understand that. So I think that one thing people can do is use a site like Charity Navigator that you can go in, you can view the financials of a nonprofit or a foundation, and you can look and see, like, how are they rated? What are other donors saying? Who gives to those types of things? So I really do believe that utilizing those services is helpful. And if you're looking at a nonprofit or an organization in your area, you know, it's always great if you can go visit them and talk to someone there. Most nonprofits are going to have an executive director on staff or someone that you can visit with about how is your funding used? What percentage of it is going to, you know, someone's salary? What percentage of it is going to day-to-day operations? And then how is the rest of it really being used? So I don't think there's any harm in asking questions. There's no harm in doing your research. Utilize those sites. That's what they're there for.
Great tips for sure. Joy, let's jump into the kind of rapid fire questions here. I alluded them to you right when we started, so hopefully you've had some time to think about them. I've been asking these for a while and always interested to hear what people come up with. The first one is, do you have a favorite song or artist?
So I have been a student of music for almost my entire life. I sing, I play the piano. I have studied music under various, like, you know, choral directors my entire life. And so I am a fan of nearly all genres of music because I think there are pieces of them that just truly speak to us and our soul. But I'll admit, you know, I'm a big fan of rap music, and I have been for a long time. I love the beat, and I love how the lyrics just work together, and I'm a fan of classical music, too. And so I can't tell you that I really have a favorite song, but music and dogs have my heart.
Okay, I like it. Next one is podcast. Do you have a podcast recommendation, or do you have a guilty pleasure that you listen to on road trips or whatever?
Okay, so this is going to be totally self-serving, and I'll just be honest with you that a fellow coach and myself actually have a podcast.
Oh, nice.
And it is, yeah, it's fitness related, but we talk about life things too. And so, I mean, it's just like my shameless plug for my own podcast, but I do listen to it after we record it, you know, and I do enjoy our content. So.
Well, might as well. I did not know this. I should have done a little bit more research, but plug away. What's the name of it?
It is No BS with Joy and Brittany.
Okay. I'll definitely put that in the show notes for sure. So next up, if you have time, and I know you're a very busy lady, do you have time to do any reading? If so, what is it?
Yeah, I love to read. And I, you know, I find that I listen to a lot more books anymore than I actually get to sit down and read because I drive so much. And I figure I can use my time in that way. But right now, I actually, you know, I have a paper book in my hands. And I think there is something special about that. It's just, it's just different, you know? And it is The Endurance Artist by Jared Beasley. So it's about Lazarus Lake and the Barkley Marathons and all of that. So I have not gotten very far into it yet. I am only about a quarter of the way through, but so far it really, really has been an enjoyable book.
All right. Next up is Road Trip Snack. If you're heading to one of these races and you pull into one of those truck stops, what are you getting?
And I love my snacks, but I will usually come out with some Goldfish crackers, maybe some Cheez-It Grooves, maybe some hot tamales, maybe some beef jerky. You just never know.
Right. Okay, next up is a piece of gear you always have with you other than your phone.
So that's going to be my key fob to get into the gym and my headphones.
What kind of headphones are you using?
So my Beats, so I can take them to the gym and not have to, you know, talk to anybody.
Okay. All right. Next up, Joy, is your take-home message. And you did a really good one there about the nonprofits and how folks can do their homework and all that. But what do you want our listeners to leave with today?
You know, more than anything, I want people to leave with just this thought of, if you're thinking about getting involved in dog sports, you know, I get that going to a new race and getting involved in something new can be really intimidating and scary. And if you're thinking about doing it, just do it, because the joy that you're going to find from doing something special with your dog, getting out there on the trail together and just creating that bond is so, so important. So don't be scared if you're like, I just want to go to a race and see what it's about. Go. People are very welcoming and you'll be able to ask questions and get involved. You know, in the same way, if you're thinking about hiring a coach, whether it's us or someone else, you know, because you want to do something more and you kind of want to push your limits, but it's a little bit scary, don't be scared to do it. Like, reach out and see what the options are. So more than anything, don't be afraid to get involved. Don't be afraid to ask questions, you know, in terms of if you're looking at giving back to something, ask, where's your money going? You know, don't be afraid to advocate for yourself and say, hey, this is something I want to do. I'm just going to go do it. And don't be afraid to advocate and say, hey, like, this is something that's important to me, this cause, and I want to get involved. How can I do that?
And taken from a true podcaster, that is no BS for sure, right?
Yep.
Very good. So, Joy, you have a bunch of places on social media that we're going to link in the show notes here. But if people wanted to reach out to you directly, whether they had questions about coaching or podcasting or dog racing or whatever, where are you most active?
Yeah. So Instagram or Facebook is totally fine. And my personal Instagram handle is Joy M. Weiss, W-E-I-S. You can find me, Joy Weiss, on Facebook. You can also look for Lucky Fox Coaching or Friends of Oso Foundation. You know, all those places you will find me.
All right. We'll definitely put the links for sure. Joy, it was a pleasure to have you back on the show. Good luck with your foundation and your podcast. And hopefully see you in Latin America next year, if we can all make it work and get down there and make it happen.
Yeah, that's our goal. We're hoping that will be a very exciting race if we can make that work.
All right. Joy Weiss is our guest today here on the Mushing Podcast. We'll see you guys next time. Goodbye.
Are you a fan of the great outdoors? Do you enjoy the thrill of speed and adventure? Then listen up. Introducing Mushing, your ultimate guide to the exciting world of dog-powered sports and mushing. Whether you're a seasoned musher or just starting out, Mushing has got you covered. Get ready to immerse yourself in captivating stories of incredible sled dog races, expert training tips from seasoned professionals, and gear reviews to help you make the right choices for your team. From the breathtaking landscapes of Alaska to the snowy trails of Scandinavia, Mushing takes you on a thrilling journey through the world of dog-powered sports.
Don't miss out on the latest issue, packed with exclusive interviews with top mushers, in-depth articles on sled dog nutrition, and stunning photography that will transport you to the heart of the action. So whether you're dreaming of competing in the Iditarod or simply want to learn more about this incredible sport, Mushing is your go-to resource. Subscribe now and get ready to unleash your passion for mushing. Visit our website at mushing.com or find us on your favorite podcast platform. Mushing, where the spirit of adventure meets the power of the pack.